After more than a quarter century at Behringer Vineyards, Ed Zbrajcia took the solo route and started his very own label, Zbrajcia Family Vineyard. And once again, the word family takes center stage with several members working at the winery. After all those years in Napa, Ed tells us what led him to Sonoma County and to the modern winery found near the shore of Lake Sonoma. Well, I'm here at Zbrajcia with Ed Zbrajcia, and thanks very much for taking the time to be with us.
My pleasure. Welcome to Zbrajcia Family Vineyards.
Thank you. And Ed, you're just off a plane from Tokyo, so I appreciate you taking the time, even more so.
No, my pleasure.
You have quite a history in wine.
Well, I grew up in this valley. I've lived in this valley. I raised my kids in this valley. But I, in a moment of weakness, went over to that other valley, the Napa Valley. I was really lucky. I went to work for a man named Myron Nightingale, who graduated from the School of Agriculture when it was still at Berkeley back in 1941. His classmates were Louis Martini, Charlie Crawford, who was the backbone of, went to Gallo in 1946 and was the backbone of Gallo. And a couple other guys, I remember once when we were, and I was young, and they were all together partying together, and we were at another table thinking, all of us commenting that that group controlled about 80% of the wine business at the time. So they were pretty impressive guys. And essentially what they did is after Prohibition, they kind of got the wine business straightened out. So they were a good group of people to Myron was my mentor and like my second father. The other person who taught me how to make wine was an old Italian here, my father named Gino, who was a winemaker in the 30s and then a farmer. It's one of the reasons I went off to college. I got a degree in chemistry first, so I was trying to get away. But I got sucked back in because winemaking got me. So it...
How old were you at that point when wine got you?
24 is when I went to graduate school, right after I got married.
And where'd you go again?
I went to Davis for a bachelor's degree in chemistry, and then I went to Cal State Fresno for a master's in winemaking.
And you were making wine for kind of a sort of well-known winery, as I recall.
Yeah, well, I first went to Hillsburg here in town for a little family called Fopiano Wine Company, and I worked for Louis Fopiano for a year. And then Myron's assistant, Steve O'Donnell, went to, and helped Eli Calloway start Calloway Vineyards in the Central Coast. And so I went to Behringer Vineyards in 1976 and had to buy a winery to get another job. I was there for 32 years.
You're a really young-looking guy. Have you ever been told that? I was a little shocked.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's genetics. You know, it's my dad was 70 and still had dark hair. And
I just thought it was wine.
And it's red wine and garlic, actually, is what it is.
I'm missing the garlic. That's why. Yeah.
Garlic helps.
I'm very serious. When you came around the corner, I'm like, that must be Adam. Wait a minute.
You're very kind.
Well, I'm being sincere, and I wish that could be that way for me. Talked to an old friend of yours when I was here on my last trip, Tor Canward.
Tor and I are good friends. We worked together for almost 30 years.
He's an amazing guy, and now you guys both have your own thing.
Yeah, Tor's wines are actually highly touted, and hopefully mine get a little mention now and then.
I stopped here on a lark. I had to do an interview over at Dutcher Crossing, and I came by here, and I stopped in just to do a quick tasting and went away with the cab going, I wish I hadn't opened that bottle because it's really, really, really good.
So, well, good.
My compliments. I'm a big cab guy. I didn't expect that here. That surprised me.
Well, I mean, Dry Creek's known for, if we look at this valley, looking down the valley, it's about 10 miles long and about a mile wide. 2 miles if you go up to the ridge tops. And this eastern side, the Dry Creek bench, is basically Zinfandel. For the whole 10 miles. We have a vineyard called named after my dad that my dad planted in 1959 called Gino's Vineyard. We named it Gino's. It was, and he made wine off it because he was a winemaker in the 30s and he had a restaurant called The Ark. That's the building we're in right now. So that's what we call this, The Ark. And there's a picture of it over there on the wall. And after that, that's how he got the money to buy. During that time, he bought the house I live in 1941. Well, now that Adam lives in it, and my son, who's the winemaker here. And basically, I grew up on vineyards here. Prunes first in the 50s. I hated prunes. And then this part of the valley actually was always in grapes because it's warmer. But the other end was mostly fruit trees, apples and grapes. And then this hillside has always been Zinfandel going the 10 miles because it has basically you get the sunset every day. So they get a lot of sun. But it's known for Sauvignon Blanc and Zinfandel. And the valley floor in the colder side produces some pretty nice Chardonnay. So we have what we call home ranch Chardonnay. And actually, I like cool climate Merlot. I've only made two Merlots in my life. one at Behringer off of Howell Mountain and Bancroft Ranch, and then my own Merlot here. I lucked out. But since I made Cabernet all my life at Behringer in the Napa Valley, I buy Cabernets. So I make 5 different Cabernets.
I saw that.
You should never let a winemaker own their own winery. It just drives my son crazy, and it drives everybody else crazy. But I like it. It's fun.
When did you start Sobraja, the winery?
Work? I started crushing in 2001 with a Howell Mountain cab called Rancho de Oso, which is my first. Behringer was very gracious to me because I'd been there a long time. They allowed me to stay and keep my day job and custom crush, so I paid them to crush my grapes. And then since Adam was working in wineries and he was basically getting trained from the ground up, he helped me make wines there. But so we were both thinking about doing something like this, but we were going to make a little shed behind the old house.
Yeah, this and is quite a shed you have here.
And in a moment of weakness, I saw this thing, and it was the banks were still loaning money, and so I kind of lucked out, I think, and we ended up with this in 2006. So I first released this September 2004. I officially left Behringer January of 2008 as a full-time employee, and I'm a consultant now. So my title's Wine Master Emeritus, which they say means honored. My kids say it means has been. I tell them it's better than never been.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty amazing, and I didn't realize it was all that recent.
Yeah, we moved in here in August of 2006. I officially bought it at the end of the year of 2006, and we opened the tasting room in November of 2006.
And just to be clear for me, this structure existed, or you built it?
It was the Lake Sonoma was the name of it, and thus the dam, Lake Sonoma, right next to us. We're the last winery on this side. The standard joke here is we have the best dam view around because the dam's right outside the window.
Oh, damn. I wanted to say that. Oh.
Yeah. So, well, just, go ahead.
I just did. Oh.
Anyway, it was a little winery, a little white house with picket fence around it, and they must have dug a cellar underneath it. And then the Polsons started it in 1977, I think. In 1997, Gary Heck of Corbell and Ken Wood and Valley of the Moon bought it and tore down the old house and built the Taj Mahal here. So I came up here and looked at it because I'd gone back and forth with all these blue roofs, but I don't go wine tasting. I go to the lake to play and went back home because when you're in the wine business, it's kind of like I need to run around a little bit more. I went to Foroy Corano and didn't get out of there for the rest of the afternoon.
Really?
Yeah, their Moscato got me. Mm. They have a black Homburg Moscato that's just killer. Anyway, when I came up here, I fell in love, and my wife had suggested come up because she'd just come up with friends, and I thought it was great, and it would work for us, and it has. It has been very good.
Even with the economic climate, things are...
Well, the economic climate is fine. I mean, in small businesses, I think, in our case, we're actually our sales are up in the tasting room. I finally have enough wine to sell to pay for this behemoth, and the problem is that... like all small businesses, funding is really difficult. Getting cash from banks, they've become very tight, I guess because of their problems with, they weren't very tight in the past and are being slapped by the federal government right now.
And by themselves to a degree, yeah.
Well, a lot of them went under, so right. I can see why they're being very conservative, but they're like drug guys, you know.
They're a lot like drug guys.
They get you hooked on it, and then all of a sudden they pull out on you. So.
Yeah, that's kind of how it happens. I know that I'm owning my own business. I understand that. Yeah. Are you farming your own grapes then, or are you doing
caprices? We have 40 acres. Actually, one of the reasons, I mean, this thing started a long time ago in 1935 when my uncle and my dad planted a little vineyard that I actually crushed that I sell in the winery called Ethola Zin. There's only two wines, Zins, I sell commercially, is the Gino Zin, and then the wine vineyard right around this is the Promise, La Promessa, because he had actually, they had a dream to start their own winery, and depression did them in, very similar to what's going on now with a lot of people. And then their lives went on, and he was a farmer, but he always made wine. And somewhere around the mid-80s, he was getting a little tired of farming 40 acres all by himself. He was 75 years old. And said, I'm going to sell these blank vineyards. And I talked him out of it and promised him I'd take care of them. So we have the same vineyard manager for the last 25 years. And everything I've ever made has gone back into the vineyards to replant. So I used to be Colombard. Zinfandel is still the same vineyard, but we put Sauvignon Blanc in, we put Merlot, we put Chardonnay in. So that I've never had to actually had to borrow a dime, but now with the winery, it's kind of the dream that they had come true, and I kind of fulfilled the promise I made to them that I'd take care of the vineyards.
And you're getting into, well, you are into your third generation with your son, and you have more family working with the winery, correct? Am I wrong? Or?
Well, all of them, the first harvest, they were here at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. You know, we pick in little blue bins and dump right into the crusher, so it's pretty simple winemaking. And but, you know, sanitation is something that my dad and Adam has learned that there are two rules. You keep the winery clean, and you keep all your containers full. So topping, barrels, you know, sanitation, you can eat off the floor downstairs. So after you finish crushing at, say, 11 o'clock, it took another couple hours to clean the place up. So we were in here. So my daughter worked here. My youngest son has actually packed every press of Sauvignon Blanc that we've made. We've been making Sauvignon Blanc since 2006 from our own vineyard. So he's just graduated. I never seen a kid, same phenomenon I had. I've never seen a child or a young man now so eager to go back to college after harvest. So he's just graduating. My daughter graduated this year with a master's in nursing, and he's graduating with a bachelor's degree in accounting and business. So I think he's thinking about CFO down the road.
Until he sees the light.
Yeah, yeah. And then he can be me.
Yeah. So do you see that? Do you see it going beyond the third generation? Is that something you'd like to see?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, actually, it's we're in the. My grandfather came over, my dad's dad, and worked here, and then my father, and then myself, and then Adam. So Adam's actually fourth generation, working in the wine business in Sonoma County. In fact, in the initial immigration that came in, a lot of people worked at Italian Swiss Colony up here at Asti.
I've heard that name before.
Yeah, and so my grandfather worked there, my father worked there. Behringer actually bought the facility, and we call it Asti, and so therefore I've made wine there. And then Adam was working at Chateau Souverain, and they make wine there. So it was there's four generations that have worked at that winery. I have a granddaughter named Sienna, and hopefully there's more to come. So, yeah, no, we're talking about continuing this on. It's part of the deal. I mean, I didn't have to start this. I could have just faded off into the sunset. But once wine gets into your blood, it's hard to get it out. You're kind of, what would I do? You know, the thing you like the best is what you do every day, which I tell my children that's something that is a blessing. You know, 10% of the time you'd like to stay in bed, pull the covers over your head. But if you 90% of the time you really enjoy what you do, life's good.
Absolutely. Just the smile on your face tells me that.
It is good.
That's great. How much wine do you make? How many cases do you make?
Well, we initially were going to stay less than 10,000 cases, but now with the facility that's a 20,000 case winery, I think we're probably up around 12, you know, and I'm probably going to make a little bit more this year.
And distribution-wise, where are you available?
Well, here at the winery. And then we are in about 20 markets around the United States. So we're in, you know, New York and Florida and Texas. And I think we're in Colorado and Arizona. We're in Washington, California, obviously. And a little bit in, like, Kansas. And, you know, so we kind of have 20 markets that we go to, really. I mean, and there's a little, once in a while, a case from a retailer gets into another store in another state and somebody files a... Because you have to have a license to sell in a state.
Right.
We have to have licenses to ship direct. And then they, as a retailer, you have to go through a distributor. The distributor has to have a license. So,
and I'm assuming you have a wine club, right?
Yes, we do.
And other than the wine club, if people want to find your wines, like in a market like mine where we can't, how would they get to it?
www.sabraja.com.
Cool.
So we sell online. I mean, the best thing is to join a club because then there are discounts built in and you get wine shipped to you. And there's a red and white club and there's a, you know, gold club has more wines, but it's also higher end stuff. You know, so it all depends on how much you want to send. If you only want two bottles three times a year, that's only six bottles. So, and you get like a 15% discount. So it's a good deal. People can go into info@sabraja.com. They'll get directly to somebody who will answer questions or find out whether or not we ship to their market. So our consumer direct is kind of the club, the tasting room, and then the internet. We have a nice website. Kind of looks like our brochure.
Yeah, I like your website.
And it's not a fancy thing, but it's something that at least gets the message across, and people can order through that. And they can always call. We have a couple of people there who are really nice. Peggy Lord runs the tasting room along with Sally Anthony, and both those ladies are very, very fun. They're very knowledgeable, and if Adam and I aren't here, they do a pretty good tour. So
you can give the number if you want.
The number at the winery is 707-473-2992.
I got one last question for you, considering the direct shipping. Do you have any concerns over this crazy bill that's out there and how it would affect you in that area?
I think it's a self-serving bill. I think it has to do with the economics of the distribution channels and them wanting to cut, consumer. I mean, it already went through the Supreme Court, and it was ruled that if someone allows shipping from their own winery in their own state, then they have to let anybody else ship from other states. It's restraint of trade. So I don't know how this bill is going to work, and there's probably been lawsuits forever, but it's a lot of money wasted, in my opinion. There are other things we probably should be spending money on than something like that. So if they're interested, they can come to info@sabraja.com, and we can send them a site where it'll go directly to the representatives, because I think that it will tell them that this is a bad thing and they should vote it down.
I think it's a Kill the Bill website out there, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, those kind of things, I think, are really positive, because I think direct shipping is a nice thing for people, especially where little wineries have no way of going through distribution. I'm lucky because Behringer has agreed to be my sales and marketing agent, because Adam and I are pretty much production guys. But if you didn't have that, how do you sell your wines? And, only so many people can come to California, especially with costs these days and consolidation of airlines. Tickets are only going to go more and more expensive. So people are doing things like what you're doing now, podcasts, or we have little videos that you can get online in and you can actually do tastings with us online, and which is kind of a neat thing. And being able to have a wine shipped to you, then you can just sit with friends and pretend like you're sitting on my deck here in Dry Creek Valley.
That's very cool. Ed, thanks a lot for being with us. I appreciate it. I know, and you've been traveling, and it's a beautiful day, and I'm sure you just want to relax for a little while.
Well, thanks for listening to the meanderings of an old winemaker, but I appreciate you coming to the Dry Creek Valley.
You can find the Sabraja family of wines at sabraja.com.